ladies and gentlemen, you're very welcome to St. Vincent's for our All-Ireland Final Preview Special with thanks to Super Value. On stage tonight, Mossy Quinn, Mickey Whelan, Pillar Caffrey, Denise Masterson, Andy Moran, and Eamon Fennell. But first, would you give it up for your host? Those Mayo corporate gigs really dried up for him in the last couple of weeks. It's Mr. Nathan Murphy!
Good evening, St. Vincent's! How are we all doing? The drive for five is on. People are feeling confident. They're feeling confident. There's a guy out in the car park selling five in a row number plates. They're losing the run of themselves already. They're listening in. And Kerry, you need a little bit of cute horrorism tonight. It is brilliant to be here in Vincent's. We've been building up to this all summer. We've been touring the country with thanks to Super Value, who've been celebrating 10 years of sponsorship of the football championship. We started out down in the Bards in Cork, who are still the only club to have won club titles in football and hurling, so you've a little bit to go to catch up to them. We went to Gweedore then. We went out with Brendan Devaney and Kevin Cassidy, and for legal reasons, we can't really talk any more about that. Kieran Donaghy brought us down to Killarney. Oof. He got that sort of welcome down there as well. We brought Kevin Kilbane back to my beloved Mayo. And it's all really been building up to this, to coming to St. Vincent's, to Dublin, the week of the All-Ireland Final. Three-time club champions. It is brilliant to be here. It is the club that gave us Heffo, that gave us Hanaho, that gave us Mickey Whelan, who is here tonight and is going to be among our guests because we have a brilliant lineup over the next couple of hours. Denise Masterson is with us, a proud member of that Dublin team that made the breakthrough in 2010, because of course it's not just the men's team who are dominating at the moment, the women's team as well, looking for three in a row. Denise is going to join us a little bit later on. As I know from my Twitter feed on a regular basis, whenever we talk about Mayo, we do get accused the odd time on off the ball of being Mayo FM, so we don't want to disappoint the Dubs, so we will have a little half an hour of Mayo FM sandwiched in tonight. He has decided this week to retire, so it couldn't be better timing to talk to the great Andy Moran. That's a very nice welcome, isn't it? We're going to look ahead to Sunday's final, but first we're going to go back in time a little bit of nostalgia. We want to get our first guest out on stage. Please give it up for Pillar Caffrey. And two of your very own here at Vincent's, Eamon Fennell and Mossy Quinn. How are we, lads?
Great. Good, Nathan.
You've been being up on this stage on a regular basis, Mossy?
Not on a regular basis, well, not as regular as we'd like, but we've been fortunate enough to be up here looking down on a couple of faces. I'm sure there's a few familiar ones down there, so yeah, great memories coming in here.
Of course, you're a commercial manager with the GEA, and as a special surprise, Mossy has bought a ticket for everybody in the audience. You wouldn't turn your back on your own people, would you?
That's the prize at the end of the night, and it's a commercial manager with Dublin GA rather than the GA. Just so
it's well, some might say one of the same, obviously, but we will go down that road later. Pillar, a week like this, looking ahead to an All-Ireland final, it's always an incredibly special week for the counties involved. What are the All-Ireland finals when you look back as a fan before you were very much involved with Dublin GA that you think back to?
Yeah, I'm looking around the room and it's a fairly youngish audience, but look, I think most of us have our grow for Dublin from the 70s, that magnificent six All-Ireland finals that Dublin contested in a row. Anybody that was into Gaelic football at all was, we were blessed. There were halcyon days back then, and everybody involved in them teams became household names. And we had great times watching them, the 1-3 of the six and betting three, and, Heffo brought Gaelic football to a level that had never been seen in the city. And, I even think now you often hear Jim mentions in relation to this present group that they're only walking in the footsteps of that great group and characters and the fellas that were there. And I suppose that's where we all took our lead from.
Your brother played in, was it the 83 final?
83, John was lucky enough to, anyone remembers, it was a horrible wet September day, the Dirty Dozen that was referred to against Galway. But a fantastic final because, you know, it was 77 since Dublin had won one, and, you know, they've been out of the picture, and all of a sudden, it was Kerry, and then with the 82, the miracle of Seamus Darby, and Dublin came in 83, Heffo again with a new team, got a great run at it, and an All-Ireland final. Funny little story about that, Nathan. I joined the Guards that year, so I was a young, raw guard down in Templemore. My father wasn't too mad on the Guards. He was a shopkeeper in Dorset Street and didn't get the reason why I was the first one going to join the Guards, and either side of the families, or nobody before me or since has joined. And I was in Irish Life working as a clerk, and he sort of said to me, "Jesus, what are you leaving a good pensionable job like Irish Life to join that gang for?" So I said, "Look, I'm my own man." Down to Templemore I went, and sure, I was loving it down in Templemore. Dermot Deasy, Ballymun Kickhams, was in the same group as me, and we had a good football team down there and good times. But up for the weekend for the All-Ireland final, and back then, it's all around hotels now and nutrition and pre-match meals and weekends away and all that. But back then, Heffa was fairly basic, so the team was actually meeting down on Distillery Road, which is right opposite the entrance to Hill 16. So they're meeting at 11:30 the morning of the All-Ireland, getting on a team bus and going out to Belfield for a walk and a bit of a chat, and then back into Croke Park for the All-Ireland final. So the house was full with visitors and well-wishers and all that, and John, being a bit laid back, was a bit late, so all of a sudden Dad was dropping him down, jumped into the car, and down they went, and he was late, so he needed to be dropped down to Distillery Road. But lo and behold, there was a fella in blue at Quinn's pub there at the junction, hand up, and my father was trying to explain, "My young fella, he's playing in the All-Ireland, I don't give a shite. Nobody's going by this junction. There's a 11:30, there's nobody around, you know what I mean?" And my father said, "Oh no, seriously, jeez." And then, "Look, I've heard it all. If he's playing in All-Ireland, he's well fit to jog down the road there." So John had to get out, throw his gear bag on his shoulder, and head down. So my dad comes back up, and the steam was coming out of his fucking ears. So he walks back in and bursts down to the kitchen where I was, and he said, "Jesus Christ, you're after joining some fucking mob."
I presume, lads, your first memory of Dublin in an All-Ireland is 95?
Yeah, it is for me. My main first memory of Dublin is the four games in a row against Meath in 1991. I just remember, I was lucky enough, my dad brought me into all four games, and we happened to, I'd imagine, like, if this weekend happened to be a replay, it's usually a rinse and repeat with tickets, so we had the same tickets for all four games. And I just remember standing in the upper Cusick at the time, and I'm pretty sure I was in tears when Dublin were beaten by Meath, and that was my first real connection. But I was lucky enough to go to the All-Ireland in 95, and I suppose, again, fortunate, Jimmy Keaveney would have lived across the road from where we were living. I would have been friends with Jimmy's son, so the night of the game, Jimmy would have brought myself and his son Timmy over to the Burlington. So I would have been I would have been 14 years of age, and we were in the function room of the Burlington, and all I remember is having the old school autograph book with the kind of letter front on it, and running around trying to get players. J.O. was the big one at the time, obviously the summer of 95, and I think that for me was an incredible, just the outpouring, and you could feel it even at that age, you could sense the joy and everything that came with it. And being in the Burlington that night was something that definitely stuck with me in terms of what this means to the city, what it means to the county, what it means to people. And you know, you'd see people from the club or from your family and the effect it has. So that was a great memory I have from 95.
What about you, Emma?
Mine was a bit different. O'Toole's my old club.
Well, now there's an interesting story.
How long have
you got?
It's an hour, isn't it?
I thought we might wait a while to get to it, but...
Come straight in, 2 foot of tackle.
Mickey Whelan.
So, programmes at the championship games in Croke Park. So, we used to go in, get a bib, and we'd sell programmes, and I think you made £1 per programme you sold. But when people...
£1 per programme?
Yeah.
I'd say you were stroking.
I used to have combats on. Money in every pocket, yeah. And ball bags, backpacks, everything.
Someone ring John Thompson there and find out, will you?
That was definitely your own rates.
I think everyone else is like a 50p, actually. But
You've gone into business since, haven't you?
Yeah. But you could go outside the stadium and sell back then. So you were allowed to go outside the stadium and sell. So because we were young, we were told to stay inside the stadium. It was safer. But everyone was coming in with programs. So a way of making money, we used to, four of us used to get together. I'd take three of the lads' bibs, go out and find people who were looking for tickets, say, look, but you want to buy the bib for 20 quid, bring you in. And we used to bring them in that way. Didn't sell any program, but made a fortune. I didn't even know the game was on, actually. So that was my kind of...
businessman.
Yeah, that was my early memories of...
It explains a lot, I think.
Good times.
Mossy, just like you talk about there, I've been there in the Burlington in 95 and going around chasing autographs and chasing JO's autograph. Your first experience of being in a dressing room with him then, is it sort of pinch yourself stuff of, I can't believe this has happened?
There's probably an element to that. I think the first time anyone goes into a senior dressing room, you're trying to act cool and you're trying to act like you know what this is about. But I think that there's certainly in me, there was that inner kid kind of looking around. And at the time, I would have been on an under 21 team in 2001, 2002. I would have trained with the senior team through the summer of 2002. So the likes of Desi Farrell, Paul Curran, J.O., like these guys were there, and they were guys I grew up watching. Kieran Whelan, like I was walking into a dressing room and they're there. And I suppose the beauty of it, when I was coming into a dressing room, there was a lot of guys the same age as me coming in at the same time that I would have been very close to. So you look at like the kind of core group of Stephen Cluxton, Barry Cowell, Paul Casey, Alan Brogan, Conal Keeney, like these would have been guys I would have been used to playing. So it wasn't as if you were kind of coming in and you were on your own trying to work your way into a dressing room, which was an older dressing room. There was a kind of wave of us coming in, which helped. But there definitely was times where, you know, you'd be getting called out even in an A versus B game, or whatever, and there'd be a full forward line of myself, Desi and J.O., and you're kind of walking into the full forward line. And definitely for the first, you're trying to make sure you show you belong and you're good enough to be there. Like, you can't be in a mode where this is great, I'm a fan, but there definitely is that split second where you look across and you're like, yeah, this is pretty cool. And
that was the B lineup, because playing that year was Ray Cosgrove, John McNally, and Alan Brogan.
Yeah. So, and like there was a number of times, but like being there for me anyway, straight away gave me that feeling that I want more of this. It was not like getting there is one thing, and I think as a footballer, you kind of always readjust your goals. Obviously, when you're a club player, your goal is to try and get into the county squad. When you get there, you do have those couple of moments of, yeah, this is brilliant, but if that's enough for you, you're not going to last very long. So it has to be then. We'll have to show that I belong. And I think that was the nature of a lot of those guys, that they expected that. And if you didn't show that, then you wouldn't have been there.
It's that Kieran McGeaney line to Johnny Doyle, as he was in charge of Kildare. He didn't need him to be one of the best six forwards in Kildare. He needed him to be one of the best six forwards in the country. You got to constantly look for a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. And I think particularly when you look at probably the evolution of Dublin in the last 15 years, I think that's probably where it's come from. I'd say since 2005, when we started getting trying to get consistency throughout Leinster and trying to get on top and that side of things. And I think the team has evolved in those last 15 years, and it's obviously in a very different position now, but that was something we were striving for at the time, was to try and make sure that we were improving ourselves within as a group, but then we had to try and get a stranglehold in the province.
Pillar, you were obviously very much involved when Mossy was making that breakthrough as a selector with Tommy Lyons. That winter of, was it 2004, when Tommy Lyons was gone? I think there was talk at the time of maybe Mick O'Dwyer possibly coming in. Were you desperate to get the big gig?
No, it was funny. Like, just for anyone who doesn't know, the history of Tommy Lyons was manager, and with him was the great Davy Billins, Pillar Caffrey, and Paddy Canning. So we served for 3 years, won one Leinster title, and then had two bad reversals in Leinster, where Westmead bet us and Laois bet us the 2 years, and at a rate of knots, things were crumbling, and then the county board decided that, look, they shook hands with Tommy, and that was it. So for all intents and purposes, everybody in the management team, we were gone, and also a group of players, like, you know, they're good luck lads, they're wondering who they have to try and impress now going forward, or who's going to come in and lift it again. And it was very much a case that Brian Mullins was the candidate that everybody was on, everybody's on. I think the county board did sit down and try and talk to him and work out, look, could they meet his needs, and vice versa. But a funny little story, the great Peregrins fella in the front row here, Davy Bourne, but I was up at a kids' match in Albert College watching one of the young fellas playing, and it was about 4 weeks after Tommy was gone, and all the speculation was Mullins, but I get a phone call, and it's Harter, who, a bread man who attached to Peregrines, and he said, "Pillar, I'm in the bookies. Come here, you have the inside track. Is Mullins getting that fucking job or what?" And I honestly, I said, "Harter, am I on the wall there? What price am I?" And he says, P45 is all behind you. So he put a few bob in Mullins, and 3 days later I was appointed manager. He hasn't spoken to me since.
A lot of the senior players, and I guess Moffy at that stage as one of the younger players, you probably just keep the head down and you don't overly think about who's going to be the manager. A lot of the senior players sort of looked at you at that time, and not that you were a yes man for Tommy Lyons, but you always had his back as a selector, and maybe a bit wary that it was going to be the same again, and they didn't enjoy those last couple of years under Tommy Lyons. But they all stressed that whatever happened at that first meeting, you just blew them away with your vision for what Dublin football could be. What's your memory of that?
I would, you know, I'd be very defensive of Tommy Lyons. Tommy Lyons came in and, you know, changed things. Things had to change. Like, it was the end of the 95 era, like, them fellas who'd won the All-Ireland. They'd been around for so long. And like, the history of it is quite weird looking back in it now, because we couldn't win an Leinster title back then. You know, Mickey will tell you the story. He was there for a while, and then Tommy Carr was there. And it was just, it was full of hard luck stories, you know, in Leinster finals and whatever. And then Tommy came in and he brought a gang of these young fellas, and he believed in them, and he threw five or six of them in that first day down in Wexford, against Wexford, and it took off. And we won the Leinster title that year, rolled on. I got to an All-Ireland semi-final and played very well against Armagh. We're pipped by a point. People remember for Ray Cosgrove's late miss or whatever. But Tommy had changed things very drastically over a short period of time for the better. But then, you know, I suppose as a group, as a management team, you take responsibility. We kept trying to evolve it, and I think we probably took too many gambles the following year in bringing in more young, talented players, and we got defeats in Leinster, which, look, wasn't acceptable. And then a losing dressing room, the players start losing faith in the management. Management start wondering if the players still believe in them. You know, eventually it does crumble, and that's the way it happened. But I would have nothing bad to say about Tommy Lyons.
The level of professionalism seemed to change pretty quickly once Pillar came in terms of what the players were given, that ye expected for nothing anymore?
Yeah, I don't know that we ever, to be honest. We were very fortunate, and in terms of, we were always kind of well looked after, in the sense, I don't think there was ever a feeling that our needs in terms of what we were getting training-wise or content-wise wasn't there. But I think when Pillar came in, to me, it was as much the guys he brought with him were very impressive guys. And straight from the off, again, from that first meeting, it was very clear. There was a clean slate. We were there as a group to get better. There was very clear messages. And I think over those first couple of weeks, he brought guys like Paul Clark in, he'd Ski Wade involved. There was guys who were good coaches, and you could see straight away there was going to be an emphasis on, in terms of, there was a reward if you were going to work hard, give everything. And as players, that's all you want. It was getting to the stage where it was dragging on, and I have a recollection that we as players had met, and we were starting to get our own gym program together and stuff like that, which isn't ideal, but it probably showed where our heads were at in terms of trying to make sure that we didn't leave it go on too long. And I think that was obvious then from the start. We knew we'd underperformed in the previous 2 years, so there was probably a bit of pressure on us to make sure that we stepped up. And I think that year, as Pillar said, we were struggling in Leinster. We had two poor performances in 2003 against Laois and 2004 against Westmeath. And there was a bit of pressure on us going into Leinster that year to make sure we got back to a certain level.
Yeah, well, it was what? One Leinster title between winning the All-Ireland in 95 and from when you did it again in 2005. Yeah. When do you look at that team, Pillar, and think, yeah, they were exactly where I wanted them to be? Was it 05? Was it by the time you got to the semi-final 06?
No, very much 06. I can't fucking get Andy Morden in my fucking head. But
you're sitting right there.
How many years too late is it? He's fucking retired. But no, you know, we improved greatly in 05. But we came up against a really, really good Tyrone team. And I think that Tyrone team, when you look back on it, it'd stand the test of time against any of the great winning teams, the caliber of player they have. But I could see, and I knew we'd made a big step forward in 05. 06, we built on it again, and again, I felt, yeah. But you know what? Each of the 4 years that we won Leinster, I felt that the group was getting more belief about themselves, they were getting more confidence about themselves. But look, you know, the year we should have gotten to the All-Ireland final, didn't. Mayo put in a fantastic second half display. You know, and like Kieran McDonald's winning score, like, I still have nightmares about it. But if it wasn't to be, I remember as a guard on duty 3-4 weeks later, whatever it was, I was in the back of the Husick stand looking down and watching three goals go in the first 10 minutes and nearly looking up to heaven saying, thanks be to Jesus, it wasn't us down there getting the hammering, because, you know,
that Kerry team were
special as well. And look, you know, GA is full of hard luck stories or whatever, but we weren't good enough. Much and all, as the players tried everything for them 4 years, and we as management team, you know, we were just that little bit short of Tyrone and Kerry, who were the real benchmarkers. Okay, we can him and hawn over whether we shouldn't have lost a 6 or 7 point lead against Mayo, but I'd give great credit to Mayo for the half that they put in that day.
Eamon, what's your memory of the Mill on the Hill?
Well, I got brought on to the panel in 2005 after winning Leinster with the 21s. And that year, Pillar kind of gave the 21s a fair crack of the whip at the O'Boran Cup, and we had a good year that year. I think we beat Wicklow down in Aughrim, which was a big win for 21s against the Wicklow team. And then had a great year in 2005, getting up to speed with where the lads are. Like, I remember coming in, you're sitting beside Wheelo, Colly Moore and Paddy Christie, Jayo. You're kind of in awe, and it takes you a while to settle in. And that kind of played on me a bit, if I was being honest with you. Pillar dropped me about 4 times throughout his career with Dublin.
Now's the time to settle old scores, aren't you?
He bought me a pint in the Grave Diggers before, so it's all good now. But he had me on the panel in 06, dropped me off, brought me back on, and dropped me back off again. So I remember thinking, fuck him.
Oh, yeah, actually, you said it.
Yeah. I was actually that day. I was in the stand after being. He called me twice that year for A versus B games to make up the numbers, and I cancelled the holiday to go to one of these games. And Davey Bourne from Ballymun and
nice fella.
Yeah, and someone else was there. That Pillar dropped as well, so the three of us were just like
bonding.
Where's his car parked?
Where did you come up with the idea of the players marching towards the hill?
You're asking me? Yeah. It was actually Moss's idea.
I've had lots of bad ideas, that wasn't one of mine.
No, I think it was Shane Ryan that came up with it, actually. He just said...
Just throwing a blame at players that aren't here to defend themselves.
Now, look, we were trying to, I suppose, back in them days, for some reason or another, every game we were playing was packed houses. There was absolutely... Somebody gave me a stat in Croke Park shortly after I was gone and said, Pillar, I think I was in charge for 21 championship games and 20 of the games were in Croke Park. We'd one near miss down in Longford where we just got out of it alive. But all the other games were in Croke Park, and the average attendance of the 20 games from 05 to 08 was 72,000. So the place was rocking. Mm. And it became part of, look, you know, how do you approach the warm-up, what do the players do, and this just evolved out of the group, and it became the thing for a while. You know, you don't win in All-Ireland, people throw stuff at you, and, you know, you're fair game, and that's the way it is.
Did any part of you ever think that what happened that day against Mayo pre-match, where a team would respond and go, you know what, we're just going to go down the hillside and we're going to warm up there? Did that ever come into your thinking, that a team might try and counter it?
No, in fairness. It's very specific in Croke Park. You're actually given a dressing room and you're now told which end you warm up in. But it was always the case that we always tugged out in the Hill 16 dressing room.
Coincidence.
And we always came out and went left. So, look, Andy, you can probably answer. I'm convinced to this day that it was David Brady that led the charge. And
Let's bring him in. Andy Bourne. Did David Brady, who's not here to defend himself yet again, we invite him to all these road shows, but he hasn't yet to turn up.
Yeah, he'll tell you he did. But no, we were going in on the bus and... everyone, to be fair, you always want to play against the Dubs. As Pillar was saying, the place was packed. It was rocking. We were going in, those Moonies being pulled. There was every sort of gesture that could have been pulled to the bus. It was brilliant. It was, and we were down the back of the bus, and the crack, honestly, no, I can remember to this day, everyone was down the back. It was like we were going to a party. Like. So we went in, and I think Tyrone and Armagh warmed up under the hill maybe the year before, the year previous to that, to the Pillar. I think the two teams went the same side and there was war. So there was a bit of crack all week, we might do it. And we just sat down for the photo, and David Heaney just said, "Come on to fuck," he said. And he just, up off the seat, bang, went left, the most un-David Heaney move of all time. And we went down and there was crack. And I remember you were kicking ball. It was a 30-yard kick pass, he used to do it. Yeah. And Trevor Howley, who didn't play much for us, but he played a few championship games for us. He just stood in the middle of this and he took 30 shoulders. Like I would say, he couldn't play. He was gone. That was one sub gone. Our nutritionist got bust. Pillar put John Morrison into a headlock. Do you know? It was a great day, but it was just brilliant.
The guy hadn't started it.
We have the photo there. Is it yourself and John Morrison?
God be good to John, yeah. But no, it was, you know, there was repercussions. I got a match suspension afterwards, so somebody had to take the punishment over. But no, did it change the game? No, not at all. Actually, you know, when you look back at it, the atmosphere at the start, Andy, was absolutely... I never heard the noise of the place. We played quite well, so it didn't affect the performance. Obviously, the result went against us, but...
But even if you look at a Pillar... What are we, 2019, you're going, Dublin are going for five in a row, we're still talking about it, wasn't it? Yeah. Isn't it amazing? Like, it's, I see Conor Mort there going fighting, like, do you know? You'd be taking him on yourself, you should have went after him, not Morrison, you know? But it was, I just thought it was a remarkable day. I know it finished well for us, but great point, you were 7 points up, should have probably killed the game. Joe, we probably got a few lucky breaks. Joe, there were so many things in it. I think Keith Higgins got a great block of Alan Brogan. But remember Mark Vaughan's free, 50 yards out. He couldn't hit it any better. Amazing free. And Clarkey gets up over the crossbar and hits it. So the luck was on our side. It was a great day and just great memory, you know?
I have a bit of a routine that every so often, you know, you might be sitting at home on a Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, you switch on Air Sport or TG Cahir and they're showing classic games. And it gets to around 45 minutes and Dublin are leading by 7 points. And I'll drop Mossy a text going, "Switch on Air Sport, you're 7 points up in the All-Ireland semi-final. I wonder what's going to happen next."
Nathan, actually, if you're the mastermind specialist subject, it'll be the Mayo Dublin game 2006. Every time we see him, it's the one thing.
Well, 46 minutes, Mayo are 7 points down. And Mickey Moran looks down the sideline and he goes, "What do we need? We need Andy Moran." What did he tell you going on the pitch?
Yeah, he brought me on for James Nolan. Kevin Bonner, wasn't it, that you played wing forward? Yeah. Kevin goes, like, I was going off. I love James Nolan. I think he was, coming into the squad, he was probably my hero, and he was running off. And Kevin goes, "Oh, great game, Jimmy, do you know?" And I thought he was pulling the piss out of Jimmy. I go, "John, fuck you, like, do you know?" Yeah. And hit him, and we went up, we got the goal, we got a few points. We're right back in the game, and you took off Kevin for Colin Moore, and he comes up to me, "Great game, Andy." And the game was in the melting pot. I was like, "What is this man doing?" Do you know? I thought he was acting the lug a few minutes before, but it was... We two geniuses playing for us at the time, in Kevin O'Neill and Kieran McDonald. If you look at the influence of the game just at the time, I think if you had your time again, you'd have probably stuck someone on Kevin O'Neill and just said, "Don't let him touch the ball." And, you know, I think Kieran gets an awful lot of the credit, but Kevin O'Neill probably made the game kind of take a tiny bit for us, and it just made it work, you know?
Do you have many regrets from the 4 years? Like, do you think back to individual games and... I moments and things that could have been done differently.
10 times. No. One of them, no.
By an MO point in the digger. Yeah. One of the big regrets. But,
I definitely have, in the sense that, and I'm always interested when you hear sports people saying they've no regrets. I think they're bullshitting when they say that, because I'd be amazed if somebody goes through a whole career. And the one that I will forever have, if you'd asked me, could I take one play back to my Dublin career, it was in the 2008 quarter-final against Tyrone, when early on in the rain, and we'd actually started okay, and I was in on goal, and I'd Dermot to my left, I'd one defender here, and I put a hand pass over his head, and I'd say I've done that move in my life 10,000 times, and we've got it right every time bar that one. And if I could have one play back, or one, and it's not something that I dwell on or I think about a lot, but if you'd ask me, could I change something? Honestly.
You're right. You're
but it was definitely one, if I could have one back, if you'd say, right, Massey, you can go back, and I've missed frees, I've missed chances, but that was the one, because I think, look, that was a brilliant Tyrone team, and they went and they beat us pretty comfortably, but that was at a stage of the game where a goal there, it would have been very interesting to see how that had gone, and that would be one I'd like back anyway.
And as Pillar said, like, the winners always get the glory, and things are brushed aside very easily when you win in All-Ireland. Like, when you look back on that moment, and it's distilling to split seconds, like, mentally, was there something that you took the wrong decision at the time compared to different stages of your career?
Well, usually in that situation, I pride myself on having a pretty good picture of what I'm trying to do, whether I'm going for goal myself or whether I'm going to give it. And I can't remember who the defender was. It was Kieran Gourley was the guy who I got the ball in front of. So I can't remember who was backpedaling. And he did a very good job where he didn't make up my mind for me. Ideally, I would have wanted him to come at me so I could give it to Dermot, or if he totally backed off, then I was going to shoot. And he kind of had me in two minds. And when I'm going for goal, I usually like to see, well, to try and see a picture of the goal of where it's empty, and I'm, that's where I'm going. And I didn't I saw one down the bottom corner, but it was a straight-on kick, wouldn't been my favourite kick, so I decided to give it to Dermot, probably at the last minute, and I just put it half a foot, like a couple of, an inch too high, and I missed it. So it was, now at the time on the pitch, I remember running out by him going, don't worry, we get the next one, and about 2 minutes later, Sean Kavanagh puts one in the far end, and you're like, yeah, that wasn't it. You know, it's tough, but like, that's definitely, I don't think it was a mental thing, it was a mis-execution on my part, and it was probably a slight hesitation being in that situation. And that's the frustration. It was something that I do quite a lot. It's not something, me being asked to win a ball in midfield or do something that wouldn't come naturally to me, and that's probably why it's one that would stick in my mind.
It felt like there was, at that stage, and maybe it's still there because of the size of Dublin, but just insane amount of pressure on you and Mark Vaughan as the free takers, that the hill reacted. If one didn't go over, they were very quick to get on your back.
I don't recall it like that, to be honest. I do. What Pillar was saying about the crowds, though, was definitely something that probably took a little bit of getting used to. Like, we played a Leinster quarter final in 2005 against Wexford, and it was part of a double bill, but it was 82,000 people at it. And you had to get used to that very quickly in terms of the sounds in the stadium are different. You can't hear anything, anyone. And so it's hard to replicate that when you're practicing your free taking. But it was something I would have put pressure on myself. I would have had standards on myself or within the group or what. Like, we would have had certain targets to go after. So whether it was me or whether it was Mark, we tried to get that level of consistency. And I'd be like, you look at the numbers Dean Rock has hit at the moment, and his are off the charts, you know. And I think it's something as every free taker, you strive to get to that. And I think I always tried in terms of keep a routine, you know, try and stick to what I was doing, practicing either out here or whether it's in Parnell Park or up in St. David's. And I always tried to. I didn't really feel the pressure. Like, there's no doubt there was sometimes you'd miss a free and you can hear the groan or you can hear the sounds, but it wasn't something I ever dealt on. It was something I would have had a pretty good selective, or to be a good free taker, you have to have a selective short-term memory. And you know, if you miss one from that spot, you don't even think about it. But if you've got one, you're running out going, oh, sure, I got one from here a couple of minutes ago. And but that is the mental side of things is probably the biggest challenge of a free taker.
Just on, and I don't know if even people appreciate, like, watching Dean Rock. You know, we've grown up on Jimmy Keaveney, and then you were into the Charlie and Barney era, and Mossy and Mark Vaughan or whatever. But like, I think somebody said Dean Rock has had 20 or 21 frees in his last four games or something crazy like that. So the numbers he's hitting year after year, like, he's hitting 90% most years for frees. Like, free takers aren't doing that up and down the country. You know, it's crazy consistent. And obviously Dublin are hugely benefit from them figures, and it's driving the whole thing through the roof.
Because of the dominance of this current team, it's easy for people to look back on that team and say, nearly men. But not taking into account what had gone in the decade before, that you had transformed that team into one that were winning Leinster titles consistently and well, and very much the breeding ground of what was to come afterwards. It also seemed like an incredibly enjoyable time, that you enjoyed that success, maybe too much, but what was it, the Sunnybank was the regular place after the Leinster finals, Eamon, when you were involved?
The Sunnybank after the game, then Hollystown on the Monday, and then whatever Pillar wasn't on the Tuesday.
It must be a nightmare having the guard as your manager.
It was the taxi man that I later found out used to catch us out, so
You know, I remember one time Pat rang us and said, go home. And I said, why? He goes, I know you're out. And I said, no. And then I was like trying to cover myself because the phone, this was like February or something like that. And he goes, no, a taxman's at the time, he's after dropping you off into Harcourt Street. He went, oh my God, you can't get away with anything. He said, but like for me back then, it was enjoyable. Like you're coming into a team and you're learning so much. And for me, like I was 20 coming into the team in 2005, never been in a gym before in my life. And then Clarkie's telling me that I need to put on 10 kg and squat all these numbers that were off the Richter scale. And then you're kind of, you just find yourself going, right, I need to change so much about myself. That transition, and at the time, for me as a midfielder, you had Kieran Whelan, Darren Holman, Darren McGee, Declan O'Mahony, John Coughlin. Like Pillar loved midfielders, and then Brian Taldy was involved, and there's about eight people vying for two positions, Shane Ryan. So you were constantly looking for extra bits to try and get in there. But these, I remember coming in, and Wheelo, I hit him in his shoulder where he wasn't looking, and I bounced off him, and he didn't even break his stride. I remember just thinking, oh my God, what were them numbers Clark was saying that I have to hit in the gym? Because I realised there and then I was so far off the pace. But in today's game, I don't think you get a chance to get, like, so anyone that's coming into the panel, if they're not ready-made to try and come in and make a stand into that team, they're just going to be gone straight away. But Pillar, in fairness to him, he gave us time to try and get in there and develop, because it was going from Tommy Lyons of running the lads to Pillar bringing a more physical element. We had to get up to the likes of Tyrone. We had to get up to the likes of Armagh. And to do that, we needed to put on weight. We needed to put on muscle, and we needed to be able to get contact on men. And as young lads, that takes time. But I think for me, the enjoyment came from just having the crack with the lads. When you weren't involved as much on the pitch, off the pitch, you tend to enjoy it a bit more. And that was a bit of it.
We had, and it's funny when you look back and you talk about the enjoyment, and certainly we played a Leinster semi-final in 2005. We beat Wexford. And again, it took us all our time to beat them. I think we got a goal in the, I think Joe got a goal, come on as a sub in the 60-something minute, and we kind of got over the line. And like that, we had a good night on the Sunday night, but the Monday was always a tradition. We'd go golfing, and when I say golfing, loosely golfing Hollystown for a couple of hours, and then a good few of us had gone home. That was enough. We were, you know, we were done. And I remember at the time, there was a guy who used to bring us around. There was a bus, and a few lads would get on the bus, and I was at home one day, and it was a summer's evening, Monday evening, I'd gone home. I'd been at the golf, but I decided not to have a few drinks, drove home. And the lads got Brian Cullen to ring me. And Brian is the most dependable guy, or one of the most dependable guys on the squad, and very straight-laced. And Brian rings me and says, listen, we're after getting DVDs of that game done in the last quickly, and Davey and Pillar want you to get it. We're going to have a look at it during the week. I says, grand, yeah. I says, well, I'll meet you tomorrow. And he says, no, you're going to have to come outside your house. And I says, yeah, okay, yeah. And so I walked outside, and I says, where are you? And he says, oh, I'll be around the corner in a minute. I'll come down. And my mother was standing two driveways down talking to a few neighbours. And it was like you could hear rustling. You know a scene in Jurassic Park where the bushes move? And you kind of look. And I looked again, and all of a sudden I saw Kieran Whelan and Shane Ryan and Brian Cullen running. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And you see this minibus pulling up at the top, and about 10 lads get off, and they're all jumping up and down, and they're dancing, and they're like, we're going out. So we actually drove around Dublin that night. I'm sorry, when I got on the bus, I was there thinking, we're going to be killed for this. Pillar and Carl Jackson, the owner, Copperface Jacks, were sitting up the front of the bus. And there was two cases of beer. And so we actually drove. They'd come out and got me, and we drove, and we ended up making our way. I just remember heading over Castleknock direction, so we ended up at the Brogans. Someone, I think Wheeler stuck his arse through Barry Cowell's parents' banisters trying to get Barry down. And it was going great until we got to, we eventually, and this is, we were a couple hours on the bus, and we got to Conal Keeney's house, and we rang the doorbell, and it was probably 1 o'clock in the morning, and Conal's dad is a, you wouldn't mess around with him too much. And he opened the door, and it was like, I think it took a couple of brave men to go by him. I think it was Darren Holman or Wheelo, and everyone else scattered the other direction, you know. So, but again, that night we ended up at, and I mean, there was guys coming in flip-flop shorts. They were, whatever you were wearing, you were taking in. And
Barry Cattle had pajamas on. It's the one thing I couldn't get, like,
in the middle of summer.
Yeah. Wheelo fell through his banisters through the whole thing and wrecked the gaff. And all I could remember was he's wearing pajamas. I've never seen a grown man wear pajamas. But no, we actually ended up in Coppers too.
So yeah, the bus stopped in Coppers and we all walked in, and it ended up, it was a great night. But the funny thing was, we had a great few days, but I think there was, we knew then straight away, like, I think we were back in recovery, say, on the Wednesday to Thursday, and at the time you had 3 weeks in between games, so you could probably get away. And look, that's probably unheard of, like, these days, it's probably they're back into recovery protocols and they probably have a night or two. But that for us at the time, we'd gone through 2 years where the squad was a little bit disjointed in terms of the players and at the change management, and that for us was brilliant, because you can't buy that type of stuff. The stuff that you do on the pitch is brilliant, but you need nights like that. And the funny thing is, if you meet up with guys now, that's the stuff we talk about. It's or like, even as Andy was saying, you're talking about the walk into the hill. It's not so much moments in games or this play or that play. It's stuff like that. And I think that was really important for us as a group in terms of bringing us together. And you don't need to go that mad every night, but every now and again, it's all right, you know.
I want to bring on stage another guest who I'm sure is going to get a rapturous welcome, because he is, well, really the king of this part of the world. He's the godfather of Dublin football. Give it up for Mickey Whelan. I presume you came in then in 09 with Pat Gilroy and were up driving the bus.
I'm just wondering now, how did we win in All Ireland? With these stories, huh? Holy shit. They thought we didn't know that, by the way.
Did that stop
them? We knew everything they were doing.
You had the similar trackers out and around the city.
Listen. Gilroy had them everywhere. They were placed all around you. You couldn't go for a piss.
I got so bad, myself, Steve, and Bernard, and Ross had to move into a house in Ongar.
And that was the key. And that was to keep them away from the good players.
Yeah. We're getting battered here tonight.
Okay, I'm sitting back here now.
You relax yourself now, Mickey. That's the main thing. You're amongst your own people here.
Amos getting a tough time here tonight. Yeah. Jeez.
Oh, aircon on this day, huh?
Has anyone got a good story about Amo, just so we keep his spirits high for the next little while?
He did get that famous touch of the ball to win the All-Ireland. Before Amo tells the story, I just want to get it in there.
Was there ever any doubt in your mind when 2009 and the call came through? Was it Pat Gilroy who gave you the call to see would you come on board and be part of the coaching setup?
Yes, it was him. And I don't forgive him for it either. But he had played for me. I coached him in a previous life.
Well, you coached him to All-Ireland the year before.
Yeah, and so he figured I'd have something to contribute. Not much, but I contributed something to it anyway. But, so you better ask me questions. I'm not good at talking.
It's in here that Mickey's not good at talking. If you put Mickey out onto the pitch in front of a group of players, then that's where you'll see him come into his own.
He talks at you.
Yeah.
So what was it like for you two then, being the homeboys, when Pat, who ye had played alongside, or you had played alongside Mossy the previous year winning the All-Ireland, is suddenly your manager?
It was definitely different. I remember Pat ringing me at the time. Obviously, Pillard finished up, and there was, again, similarly, there was a bit of uncertainty over who was going to come in and take over. And I think anyone other than Pat or whoever ended up putting him in charge, if Pat's name was mentioned, the reaction probably would have been just, yeah, go away out of that. Like, I don't think it was even mapped or on the radar until it actually came in. So certainly my relationship with Pat changed, not so much Mickey. Mickey managed the team that we'd won a Club All-Ireland in March 2008. So they came in towards the end of 2008. So Mickey was always a coach, a manager from my side, but I suppose the relationship with Pat was different. Like, Pat had been full forward on that team that we'd had a brilliant run in March. So going from a dynamic of being a teammate to then someone being a manager was definitely, and I suppose just how you talk to him, how you relate to him and different things like that. So there was probably myself, Ger Brennan, Dermot, Michael Savage. So there was four or five of us in a similar situation. So it was definitely, probably was different for us compared to some of the other Dublin lads, yeah.
I know, Mickey.
So I take it from that I was different, you know. The Pat was our buddies here, and who's this gobshite, you know?
I'm actually saying the opposite. Pat was the gobshite. You were the other one.
Of course, Pat's not here to defend himself. So he can say what he wants.
I'll tell him. Well, just the point you made about you were able to get over the miss. Mm. I think that winning the All-Ireland made that a lot easier for you. Because I think, had you not got an All-Ireland medal, it wouldn't be that easy to rid yourself of that. Because it's still there, but it's there in a way that you're happy anyway, you know.
Yeah, the funny thing is, so that happened in, say, August. It was probably the August bank holiday weekend. Toronto beating us. And we were back with the club in club championship. So we were defending our Dublin title going into the club championship in 2008. And we had a tough game against Sylvester's, and it was out in Innisfail in Balgriffin, and it was a wet night, and we pretty much had a replica moment where I ran through, hand passed it to Dermot, he scored a goal, and I'll never forget, there was a fella behind the goal going, "Oh, you pair of gobshites, you couldn't have done that a month ago," you know. So, and it was one of those, and I remember John Leonard, who was the sub goalie under Pillar for a while, John Leonard was in goal for Sylvester's that night. And John's a great character, but again, he said something similar coming off the pitch. Now, he was really into it that night. Like, I would have had a good relationship with Lenny, and on the pitch, he was coming out, and he was trying to get physical, and I was looking at him going, "Lenny, give me a break," you know. And after the match, he kind of said similar. So, again, it was little things like that. Like, you just move on from it pretty quickly, but it was something we got over, you know.
Yeah, but I had a bad experience in an earlier time with the senior footballers, and I walked away from it. And there was a sourness, you know, for a good while. And I think that the winning of the Club All-Ireland, that set me free, that I wasn't the gobshite that people thought I was, you know. And so the rest, I lived with it, you know, but it was in the back of my mind all the time until that was achieved. And then the winning the All-Ireland, and, you know, that just killed it.
It's a long time
off.
For it to be there. Yeah, in the back of your mind, like, that's 10, 11 years between leaving the Dublin job and winning the Club All-Ireland.
Yeah, but it's a big ordeal to lose an All-Ireland final. Do you know what I mean? It's an ordeal to get there. There's a lot of hard work done. And I mean, you'd know about this, Andy. Do you know what I mean? No. Listen.
We invited this man up for Mayo. No,
I got someone else again.
One point. Dublin have won seven All-Irelands, is it? Six or seven? I don't know. But there was five or six of them by a point. By a point, folks. I mean, the ball could go anyway. It could have gone anyway. Do you know what I mean? So you were unfortunate in a lot of occasions. Do you know what I mean? It's very difficult to live with that. But your own performances helps you. Because you were never found wanting on the field. You were great.
Well, I think this was a good pep talk for Andy.
It reminds me of a little story. When I took over, and we played Cork down in Porky Ring in the National League, and Billy Morgan was manager. And some supporters came down the train that day, and they were obviously having a few gargles, and I don't think they were too happy that part of Tommy Lyons' ear that was back, myself and Davy Billings. So the match wasn't going well, and these two fellas with cans in their hand, they were saying, "Hey, Pillar, you fucking wanker. You're brutal. Why didn't you fuck off at Lyons?" And I'm going there. And Billy Morgan's walking up down the line. He's like, "Pillar, are you hearing this?" And I said, "No, can't hear a word," I said. "We're getting bit by 8 points out here, that's all I can say." So the lads were getting no juice out of me. So next day, "Hey, Morgan, you f-" So next thing, Billy Morgan looks at me and goes to the railings and calls one of these fellas down. "Come here, come here, come here. Of course, your man came down to the railings and Billy planted him with a box. The lads were quiet for the rest of the game.
Well, this has gone off on a tangent. As you say. We'll reintroduce you, Mickey.
For me, though, one of the things about... I got my first championship start in 2008 against Louth, and that kind of, for me, gave me that push that I needed, like, you know, to move on to the next stage. And then when Mickey and Pat came in 2009, I found myself in limbo because I was suspended for a year from the...
What happened there?
It wasn't for bad behaviour.
No. I think a lot of people would have just lost faith in me and just said, like, you know, Pat was coming in and Mickey were coming in, and they just would have forgotten about me. Like, I couldn't make an impact that year, but they kept saying, look, keep working. And it was hard because you're mentally trying to come and prep for something that's not going to happen for you, like, you know, and play the whole year in trainings and all that kind of stuff. When we came into 2010, after getting spanked by Kerry, we worked on tackling, and we must have played Monaghan about 8 times up in Monaghan, yeah, where the referee had no whistle or cards, and it was literally just about tackling, getting contact. And we'd obviously done a lot of tackling under Pillar's time with Ski Wade, who was the defensive coach. But Mickey brought in tennis balls into a training, and I'll never forget it. We were like, what's he doing? Mickey's lost it. And he's going, right, take the tennis balls off one another. And you're just kind of going, okay, yeah. And he goes, no, take it. So you're grappling, you're getting it close, you're trying to pull it out of your hands. And Pat came up to a few of us after and said, you know why you're doing that? And I said, having the clue, and I'm afraid to say anything to Mickey. He goes, when you're tackling...
I'm a nice guy, don't mind.
When you're tackling, you're standing off. We were standing off too much. We were waiting for
tackling.
The impact.
They weren't tackling.
Yeah.
You were imagining it. The whole team. The fucking whole team. You know what I mean? They're running around after you. Tackling is bang, ball gone, ball on the ground, so man on spread eagle. That's the way they do it in Kerry. You know, and we're shallow on the guy and giving him time to pick out a nice pass. Hold on there, keep that. There he is, give it over there. And then another foot going over. That had to die. That was killed off, I can tell you that. Savagely.
So tennis ball, but the whole thing with tennis balls is it forces you to get in to a man and grab the ball rather than standing off because you have to get in the ball smaller. I remember just thinking, oh my God, that's unbelievable. Why has no one ever done that before? Like, you know, and that was just something small out of the 100 million things that Mickey and Pat did in regards trying to elevate us to the next level, like, you know.
It always felt, Mickey, like you were, from what Eamon's telling there, those sort of stories of coaching, that you were a pioneer of GAA coaching. But were there people that you were looking at, who you admired, who you were learning from? I know you're going to play down your influence now, but just go with me on this.
I coach, okay. Look, I'm a PE teacher, you know, and there's a lot of pedagogy in coaching, and there's a lot of coaching and pedagogy. So coaching and teaching go together. It doesn't matter what you're teaching, you know, you're bringing the best out in people. And I have a philosophy that you haven't taught until they've learned, do you know what I mean? And I read that in a book by a great basketball coach in America. That's the fact. If they're not getting better, you're doing something wrong. And I was hard on myself, but I was awful hard on them because I thought that it was needed. You know, there was times, I'm sure, that they thought I was trying to wipe them out, but I was. We needed to get them to the stage where nothing physically was going to stop them. And then we thought that, you know, mentally, look, Cluxton walked up to that free to kick it. And every one of us knew he was going to put it over the bar. And he knew he was going to put it over the bar. And that's why he walked up and put it over, because time was running out. And there's another thing there. This is one of my big gripes here. Cluxton should have been player of the year. At least one of the years. At least one of the years. You know, that's bullshit. I mean, I'm not into those awards, you know. I'm not into those awards. But if they're giving them out, this guy is a phenomenal. He's a phenomenal guy, and he's a great. He's the best keeper I've ever seen, soccer or Gaelic. He's a great keeper, and he's a bright guy, and just talks very little, and plays 100% in everything, you know. And that's what that team did, and that's what it's still doing now. They're going out there, and they've a confidence in themselves. It doesn't give a shit what comes. We're going to get it at the end. We're going to get this done, you know. And that's when that psychology is there. And you know, Kerry played us. The Dublin team that you talked that had got the four All-Irelands, the 70s, themselves and ourselves, 2011, were the only twice in 80 years, that we beat Kerry in championship. Can you believe that? So these guys were coming up, not even worried about us. Every time we played these, we wiped them out. We had to change that. And now they were in our heads, and there's no doubt about it. We're in their heads now, you know. But and that's the way to go there.
And would you say there was one moment in that final? Was there one touch that was crucial to Dublin turning the tide?
Yeah, to be serious about it, there was. And it was definitely that activity, you know. Ger made a bad mistake, and you've saved his mental psychology. But I mean, those things have to often happen, and you know, you happen to be in the place, and it also gave you great gravitas to yourself. At least you were on the field for a couple of minutes, but you had a serious input to the game, you know. Then we got rid of you.
No, it was going so well.
We didn't. He didn't get the credit that he should have got.
I think one of the things that the guys did was even just like the phraseology that you used, like, you know, you're not a sub, you're an impact player, so go out there and make an impact. And like before, you think as a sub, you go out, you have to try and do something to try and get into the game. But that impact was related to what the game plan was, that we didn't deviate away from it. And thank God Jerry made it balls of it, like, you know, that you do feel something. Because I remember looking at Ross McConnell on the sideline warming up for about 10 minutes. And I slag him about it now, but I know for a while after, he really struggled because he warming up for 10 minutes and he wants to try and get in, and he didn't get in to the way he wanted. And then I had one touch in the game and was lucky enough to knock the ball down. But
which hand was it, Eamon?
It was the left hand. But the thing is, like, you know, you get them little moments, and like you look at people like Ross, who was that year, he pushed me to a level that I had never been before in training games. And I think there was little things like that as Mossy said, you remember a lot of the stuff away from the game itself to what got you there, like, you know.
How was it for you, Mossy? Because it is a weird thing getting the All-Ireland medal but not getting on the pitch in the final. But because you'd given so much to Dublin over the previous decade, like, did it feel very much like, yes, I've achieved everything I wanted to achieve, I have that medal?
Yeah, absolutely. The first sense was, to be honest with you, I was actually down beside Ross, and I think we'd one sub left. And from about the 60th minute on, the two of us were there and we had our jerseys off, and at the stage we were four down. So the way it was looking, if we needed a goal, it was likely going to be me. And then when Kev Mack got the goal and it went level, then it flipped back to be more likely to Ross, because Pat had walked down the sideline once or twice to both of us. So absolutely no doubt you would have loved to have been on the pitch, but certainly we put so much into it, and I take great pride in it. What we'd given, or like, there's a couple of guys who would have been in similar situations to me, and there's no doubt I put huge value in it in terms of the medal I have. And it definitely didn't feel, people have asked me, did it feel bitter? Absolutely not. Like, it was so hard to get there, even to get to a final. We'd never been in a final. To get there, to win it, the manner in which we won it, and it was an incredible group to be a part of. And
Just on that, by the way, and I'm not just saying it because he's sitting right beside me, but I look back on that year and I don't think about
Berno Klucko or any of these guys having a great year, which they did. I think Amasi and David Henry, that just every training session, and Mick Fitz actually said it after, I think it was the Wednesday or Thursday night, where Amasi was thinking about, will I, won't I give it another year? And Mick Fitz said, well, look, I actually don't think I'll be the player. Will you give it one more year? Because Amasi had pushed him so hard. David Henry was unbelievable that year. And I guarantee if you asked everyone that was on that panel, they are two of the people, and Ross McConnell for me, that just brought training to the next level. And it's away from everyone, so no one sees us, and they don't get the credit they deserve. But for me personally, and I know from talking to the lads, they deserve more credit than anyone else. Like,
I'd make one point from my own perspective. I think that Mossy stepped down a couple of years too soon. I think he was stronger then. That was the period where he was most strong, and he ended up probably, in my view, the best club player in the country for the next 6 years. He won three. He was phenomenal. And I honestly believe that you were stronger than you'd ever been when you stopped, and that would have just gone on better and better. But your ability, you know, you proved it then right through those club All-Irelands. I made the guy captain too, by the way, and I picked my captains very, very seriously. So,
and just to put a bit of context on, like, in terms of the lads that were there in 2011 when we got over the line, and great credit rightly goes to Mickey and Pat, but the senior fellas who are still around, I always think of Kieran Whelan, lads. He made his debut in 96, the year after he won the All-Ireland. Mickey played him at wing forward in 96, and he retired in 2010. So for 14 seasons, he soldiered for Dublin consecutively and was a brilliant player for Dublin, and yet he never got to play in one All-Ireland final. So the plaudits that are going around today in terms of what these fellas and the halcyon days that we're all enjoying, I do always flip back and think of a great servant like Kieran Whelan and never got the honour of running out in All-Ireland final day. Okay.
The Kilmacud, not the Kilmacud, the hurler.
Keeney.
He missed out on a, you know, he was a great footballer too, you know. He missed out on an All-Ireland and just went a year too early.
I do still think from that day one of the abiding memories is the photograph pillar of you there working. Like, it sums up everything about the GEA and the amateur ethos of the GEA, that after all you've given to Dublin, you're there in Croke Park, the players come over. There's some great shots of Bernard Brogan.
Yeah, and look, very special person there beside us there, the great Davy Billings.
Yeah.
And it was one of those moments. My job that day was actually minding the referee, because if people remember in 2010, Loud and Meath had a Leinster final where Joe Sheridan scored a try and it was given as a goal. And the referee was assaulted after the match coming off the pitch. So they said, right, from now on, we have to have a guard who will take the referee off the pitch. So I was lucky enough to be handpicked for that job. So Dublin Joe did all right that day, so he didn't get assaulted. And he came off the pitch. So I was down pitch side, and Davey was obviously in the Cusick, and I got him down on the pitch side, and sure, the players couldn't miss the tick head and the two of us.
How were you for the final minutes?
Yeah, no, look, I'm a Dublin supporter first and foremost. I was lucky enough to be given a chance by John Costello to get involved at the senior level. I was on the hill in 83 watching my brother. I was there for all the six finals in the 70s as a young fellow watching it. You know, I'm in there on Sunday now, back being the best supporter ever. So, very emotional. And, like, the breakthrough, like, it was a long gap now from 95. And I knew the calibre of players, and I knew the calibre of work that was going in. And, you know, and even, like, Mickey and Pat, when they came in 09, like, they did a fair job turning it around. You know, it had been heartbreaking 09, heartbreaking 10. So it wasn't all honey and roses. So very emotional. And look,
are you able to go home everybody that night and say, you know, I've been a part of this?
Well, look, we were the county board, the class act that John Costello is. The previous managers were invited to the function that night, so we were there and able to join in and celebrate with the lads. But these are so special days that just everybody should get out and enjoy them.
They've won six now and I haven't got an invitation. You were special. It'll tell you what they think about me.
Surely they will change that for the five in a row on Sunday night. We are going to look ahead to Sunday's final in a little while, but while we're here and while you're on stage, Mickey, I do want to talk about... Well, I always get nervous when I have to talk about Mr. Connolly because I'm never sure what to call him, whether it's Dermot, Dermot. You see, I'm not in Dublin long enough to call him Dermo, I don't
he
think.
He doesn't give a shit what you call him.
We've called him worse, to be honest.
Just call him Dermot. That'll do us. Dermo. Dermo will do us. Dermo.
Do you remember the first time you saw him play?
I do. Yeah. I brought him onto an under-21 team as a minor. And we won the under-21. And I was manager of the senior football team. And I saw this gang coming in the back door, coming in through Vince's all together. And I was looking at them, and we played a bit of a match when I was appointed. And we went up for a cup of tea. The management always went up for a cup of tea after training, because that's a philosophy of mine. You know, we need to have a bit of crack ourselves, sit down and talk things through. And they were worried about the group out there, and I said, I insisted on getting the under-21s as well, because I didn't want screwing up having to go to the 21 manager to say, we need three of them, those players. I wanted to be, you know in control of it. I'm a control freak, you know. But I saw them all coming in the back door, and the boys said to me, after the session, the mentor said to me, there wasn't much there, Mickey, was there? And I said, I think that in a couple of months' time, that the younger players will be beating the senior players, and they were near enough, but they ended up winning the club All-Ireland, that guys. And, you know, there's a good mixture of very young and very old. But we played a 21 final up in O'Toole's pitch.
You beat us that year, actually.
Yeah, you were on there.
Us.
Yes. Us. Yeah. Wow.
That's why you were no longer us. You know, you're us now. So I saw this guy. Anyway, but I was with the Dublin Miners at that time. Anyway, Tiernan got
Tiernan Donovan.
Yeah, broke something, didn't he? Do you remember on the sideline he had to go off? And I brought Dermot out to midfield because they were coming back at us. Bridges were coming back at us. And I said to them, you went 21 the time. I said to Dermot, come here, you're going out to midfield. Okay, no problem. And I said, we need to win ball because we had 5-point lead and it was brought down to 2 with a couple of minutes to go. And I said, you have to get every ball here now, your midfield. Okay. So he's walking back out and he came back to me and he says, who's going in my place? I said, nobody. Nobody. Out he went. He couldn't understand this. Why was there nobody going in his place? I said, but you're going to be out there on your own. If the guy comes out, fine. If he doesn't, you get the ball. And he caught the next 2 balls. He got 2 kickouts. He was fouled for 1, put the free down, hit it with his left foot. Got the next ball, kicked it out, and put it over the bar. So that was 4 points left, and it was only about a minute, so the game was won. He won the game in 2 minutes, you know. But he was from the very... He was as good a hurler. I'll tell you a good story about...
Stop for Jason.
DCU put on a conference, a national conference, that was soccer, Gaelic, rugby and all. And we got the Tipperary All-Ireland winner and a coach.
Mickey English.
I'm getting very old, folks. You know, I'm well into the over-the-head business. But so he came down. He was to give a presentation on hurling. And he came down to us and... at the last minute, they wanted a video so that they'd be able to show the video as well as the... So And I phoned Diamond and said, listen, we got to get a few players here. And Tony Diamond said to me, go into Art School Reach and get Jerry's name?
Jerry O'Brien.
And tell him you want many players you want. We want about seven or eight. Fine. And don't take Dermot. Dermot is doing his junior cert. So in we went, and we did everything, told Jerry not to get Dermot. So we're waiting there. Next minute, this guy materializes beside me. What's going on here, Mickey? Dermot. Oh, Dermot, you we're going. No, I go. I said, does the teacher know you're out here? Oh, yeah, yeah. I just told him I was going to the toilet. Back in there. So I said, you can't come. Diamond said you're doing your junior cert and you're not to come. These guys are not doing any exams this year. It's only a Mickey Mouse thing. Anyway, that was Dermot. He just shifted away, ghosted away. And off we went up to the pitch in Glasnevin. Materialised beside me again. Here, Mickey. Fuck you. Damn it, I'd be in trouble. You're all right, Mickey, don't worry. Anyway, within 2 minutes or 3 minutes of the activity going on that was going, he was down to me to say, who's that guy out there? That's as true as God. I said, Dermot Connolly. He said, that guy is special. 3 minutes now. That's true as God. So he is a very good athlete. I'd say he could have taken on any sport. But he's a big loss to hurling. I'm a hurling coach, you know.
Well, just on Dermo, Davy Billings was the brains of the operation in terms of he knew every kid that was coming through the system. So he said to me at training on a Saturday morning, he said, Biller, there's a kid coming through, Vincent's. Vincent's are playing a challenge game this afternoon. He'll actually be playing. So I said, Davy, I'll meet you down at Vincent's. What time's the game at? So we met him on the bank outside here. And we're looking in. Dave said, oh, feck it, he said. They're not picking him. He's not playing. So I waited till half-time. And next, Dermot was out having a kick around at half-time. And like Mickey says to the hurling, having seen him for 3 minutes, having the kick around at half-time, I said, Davey, get him into training on Tuesday night, invite him in. That's how good Dermot was as a kid, and I don't know what memories Mossy has of him, but he just blew us out of the water in terms of the talent that he had.
You were no longer the golden child of Vincent.
Yeah. And you know what? It was great because it was, to be honest, it was a couple of years where I remember that 21 team coming through, and my first few years with the seniors, we got to a county final in 2002, and we were well beaten by UCD at the time. And Vincent's, you talk about Dublin going a long spell without winning a championship. You know, it was back into the early 80s before Vincent's had won one. And I was looking, and when I'd come into the senior team, I knew there was going to need to be guys coming behind me if we were going to have any chance of success. I remember being on the sideline that night watching the 21s win and thinking, well, there's something coming, and Dermot was one of the guys. There was a number of guys that came through, but I think from the very start, when he started playing senior football championship with us, I think we see the game a pretty similar way in the sense of what we're trying to do as forward. So I think we kind of naturally had a pretty good understanding from a very, very early start. Now, we have very different skill sets. I can't do a lot of the things he can do, but in terms of where he wants to put the ball or what he wants to do with it, I think there was always that kind of... and we would have had that from early on. Like, we would have played championship in 2006. We beat Jude's in the semi-final. Pat Gilroy's had two of the most outrageous dives I've ever seen in my life. We robbed Jude's that night. But Dermot got a goal that night. I got fouled about 45 yards out. We needed a goal, and I looked up, and it was like he was the only one. I could see him moving, and it was the one run where I knew we had a chance of getting goal. We ended up getting goal, and then Pat took the two dives. But just quickly, just as I say, Jude's would have had a cornerback at the time. His name is escaped me. He's from the country. He's a long, real long ponytail, and he was a good footballer, really tough. But he was their captain, and the tradition of the captain kind of coming into the dressing room seems to have gone in recent years. But he came in after that semi-final. I don't know if you remember this, Mickey, and we got to a county final, and we were all delighted. And he came in. He knocked on the door, and he came in, and he actually stood up on the bench in Parnell Park in the dressing room because he wanted to make sure everyone in the room could see him. So straight away, he was like, well, this fella obviously has something to say. And he says, usually it's tradition to come in and wish the team that beats you luck, but you're a share of robbing bastards. And that wasn't it.
good on balls.
Yeah. And I think he was escorted. I don't know if his feet hit the ground going out the door again. And I actually, to be honest with you, I had huge admiration for him. He was obviously very, very emotional. He'd actually got sent off in the two penalties the pack got. Paul Copeland was the goalie for Jude's, and I scored the first penalty. And for the second penalty, he came out and started talking to me and telling me he knew where it was going. And after the second penalty went in, I walked in and I was just reminding him that he obviously didn't know where it was going, and I got nailed from behind. And to add to his frustration, he ended up getting a second yellow, so he was obviously tick, but he came in after that game, yeah, and he told us that he didn't wish us any good luck in the final. And it was,
fair enough.
Fair play to him, yeah.
Just before we wrap this section then, Mickey, and just on Jeremy Connolly, from a club point of view, from a Vincent's point of view, and even from your viewpoint on your footballing philosophy, you must take enormous pride that looking at this Dublin team, probably the greatest team we've ever seen, that Vincent's have produced in Jeremy Connolly, probably the most talented player in that side.
Yeah, he's a very, very talented guy, but there's a lot of very talented guys on that team. A lot of very talented guys. I mean, you don't win 6 All-Irelands unless you have a very talented team. So Dermot, you know, is a great player, but at different times, different people win games for you. Do you know what I mean? So I'm never picking out guys over other people. He's a brilliant player. I'd go into the jungle with him. But this Dublin team wins the matches because of their teamwork. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So there's a lot of very good players there.
What do you think is going to happen on Sunday?
I think Dublin will win, but it won't be as easy for them now as they've had, you know, recently. I think Kerry will be fired up, not because to win in All-Ireland, but they missed out by a fluke, really, on getting 5 in a row. And it wouldn't be nice for us to get the 5 in a row, so they'll be doing their damnedest to prevent that. So it'll be an interesting game.
It certainly will. Yeah. Give it up for the great Mickey Whelan. And also for Eamon Fennell, for Mossy Quinn, and for Pillar Caffrey. The lads are going to come back and help us preview the final a little bit later. We're here with thanks to Super Value, who are celebrating 10 years as sponsor of the All-Ireland Senior Championship. We're going to take a very short break. If you want to grab a drink or head to the toilets, we're just going to take a break for 5 minutes or so before we get you all back in. Lots more good stuff to come. Thank you very much, St. Vincent's.